a great location to do physics and mathematics and interact with a lot of interesting people. So I wish you all the best for the success of the facility. And I'm sure it will be. Also, I think I'm happy that our field and its relation to various branches of mathematics are chosen as the first guinea pig and speak well about the activity of the field. So, and my talk is for 45 minutes, so I'll try to be punctual. So I'd like to tell you about the non-planar diagram. In matrix model, and based on two papers, this nice blackboard. based on these two papers with Cameron Buffer, who is visiting us at Caltech for 6 months, and since the last summer, there has been lots of interesting activities about matrix models and their relations to various gauge theories in four dimensions. And there are basically two interesting aspects of these constructions. One is that if you look at the planar diagrams of matrix model, these compute for you the effective superpotential for various gauge theory in four dimensions. And the other interesting aspect is that many of these matrix models are solvable, not all of them, but quite a few of them. And for those of them, the eigenvalue distributions, so these are solvable case, makes very interesting geometry, and these are closely tied to Calabi-Yau geometry. In the case when the models are solvable. And there are interesting story like large N duality. Or mirror symmetry. That have been developed in the past 10 years or so. Enters, and so there is a very nice interplay between geometry of Calabi-Yau space, the matrix model, and the dynamics of gauge theory. Tied together within this structure. So these are all nice and interesting, but there are more to matrix models. And so in particular, so far, one is only looking at planar diagrams and also eigenvalue distribution, which correspond to the semi-classical approximation in some sense to this matrix model computation. So you can ask about matrix model. Feynman diagram also contains non-planar diagrams. So what are they doing? Do they have any significance to gauge theory and other aspects of this construction? And then there are interesting questions. So for example, some of the planar diagrams are typically, the Feynman diagram, planar diagram are typically summable, but non-planar ones are typically not, and these are closely related to ambiguity of matrix model integrals. And there are a lot of investigation done in early 90s about that. And so you can ask what's going on there, etc. So I'd like to discuss those issues today. Now, you said 45 minutes. To be precise, until what time? Oh, I can be flexible about that.
Since I don't have my watch with me, you have the upper hand.
How about if I say until 10 o'clock? That makes sense? So I gained the time for the introduction. So these are typically gauge theory with n equal 1 supersymmetry, although there are cases with n equal 2, etc., discussed in this context. So n equal 1 supersymmetry contains these two supercharges. These are spinners in wire notations. And the important aspect of this super algebra, one of the important aspects is that the one with dotted indices, anti-commute with each other. So naturally, you can define cohomologies associated to it. And this gives rise to the notion of chiral primaries and chiral rings. So the first thing one may want to investigate in gauge theory is to study the properties of these chiral rings. So being gauge theory, you have to have a vector multiplet. And it contains gauge theory. This is unusual notation for gauge theory, but vector in four dimensions can be represented as bispinner. So this is a gauge theory, a gauge field in the more standard notation. And spinner, and its conjugate spinner. And then they transform into each other under gauge supersymmetry transformation like that. Size are invariant under Q bar. And gauge field itself transforms into psi, like that. Okay? So these are basic gauge supersymmetry transformation property. So this suggests that these are chiral primary fields. Because these invariant and Q alpha dot. Okay, so are they all chiral primaries? Actually, it turns out not to be the case, because some of them actually are Q bar of something else. And so to see that, I just need to note that if you compute the anti-commutative size, by the way, I should say that we are talking about a vector multiplet. So A takes value in the adjoint representation of a gauge group. So is psi. So this product includes the product in the gauge group indices. You can write it as Q bar of something else by using this symmetry transformation properties. And so therefore, modulo Q bar, you can set this to be equal to zero. So if you take anti-commutator of these guys, this is equal to zero. So this means that these are chiral primaries, but this is not, because there is alpha and beta, alpha, beta, gamma are just 1, 2, 3. Sorry, not 3, 1, 2. And so if you have more than 3 of them, it's inevitable that at least 2 of them have the same indices. And therefore, you can use this to say that this is trivial. So this is actually weakly equal to 0. So this was a rather important observation about classification of chiral primary fields in this gauge theory, and important, for example, implication in ADS-CFT correspondence. For example, in the early days of ADS-CFT correspondence, there was a puzzle about what are the meaning of these fellows, because there isn't one in the supergravity side. And then it was pointed out that because of this property, that really you don't have so many chiral primary fields. Now, I will sometimes talk about superfields. This is some kind of machinery to combine different fields in a given super multiplet into a single function, taking a single function over superspace, a space of bosonic coordinate as well as fermionic coordinate. And the superfield I'm typically using a so-called Greene superfield. Whose lowest component is this Greene, which is a super partner of the gauge field. And again, we have this kind of relation as a chiral superfield. Okay? So this is so far rather standard. Now, I believe this is an audience of mathematicians and physicists. So before I go on, I just want to make sure that I'm at correct level of exposition, or if there is any question so far. Okay? So this is actually quite important. And for example, in this the proof of this statement that if you want to compute effective superpotential of this kind of n equal 1 gauge theory, only planar diagram contribute and also the function Feynman diagram integral reduced to the finite dimensional integral of matrix model. So there is a proof for that, but this proof used heavily of this kind of properties. And so that's very important. Now, in a recent paper that I just mentioned here, we pointed out that actually this relation, which relation? This relation. Or this relation, equivalently, to be modified if we turn on supergravity background. And this leads to the interpretation of non-planar diagrams. Actually, some of these facts were rather classical. So, let's couple n equal 1 supergravity to this background. And so, again, I introduce some other fields in the game. So, I introduce W alpha beta gamma, which is a totally symmetric so-called gravitino superfield, which starts with gravitino, which is a super partner of graviton, and then there is a term linear in theta multiplied by R square contracted appropriately, etc. And so this is called a gravitino superfield. And this is introduced in the supergravity literature as a torsion. So in Riemannian geometry, we don't have a torsion. But in superspace, you have a torsion. And so if you compute the anticommutator of these guys, remember these are vectors in four dimensions. So these are ordinary covariant derivatives. In supergravity background, there is a torsion for that. And this chiral superfield, gravitino superfield, appears as a torsion. And then you can show what happens is that now, so when I proved this identity, I made use of the fact that this is covariant derivative for gauge field. But if you couple this to supergravity, of course, this has to be modified because now this is going to be covariantized with respect to the supergravity background. So this contains the gravitino and metric, etc., spin connection. So you have to take into account the variation of Q bar of this with respect to Q bar as well. And so this is a simple algebra to show that then that relation is modified into this. So this deforms the chiral ring relation. So W is the superfield whose lowest component is this gluino. And the right-hand side is not zero, but is equal to the combination of gravitino and gluino.
What is the representation of
W? Okay, so this is... So, yeah, good. So, so W, as I said, takes the value in adjoint representation. So you take product according to that, and that is linear mm-hmm. in W.
I'm wondering more about, is it totally symmetric in alpha, beta, gamma?
I forgot to say, this is totally symmetric.
Oh.
It's totally symmetric. So this is symmetric. This is symmetric. Okay, I forgot to say that. Oh, did I say that? Okay, thank you. But I forgot to repeat it. Also, it may be useful to say that when I write, being adjoint representation, we can write it as in this way, where A, T are the gauge group generators. And then if W, alpha, A are Grassmannian, which is an ordinary standard assumption, then the anticommutator can be written as FABC W alpha C. Wait. So this is equal to F A, sorry, W A alpha A W beta B commutator. So this is equal, F A B C W alpha A W beta B times TC. And so in this relation, for example, you are to identify this with W gamma C times TC times W alpha beta gamma or something like that. So this would be the relation. This times this is equal to that. Could be an standard interpretation of this. If you assume that these are Grassmannian, which is a standard interpretation. Now, however, we'll point out that actually, in order to understand the non-planar diagram, we'll be forced to make non-standard interpretation of this kind of relation, which I'm not sure if you have time to elaborate on that, but if I have, I'll be discussing that. And so this is a particular supergravity background, but actually we also pointed out that we can further deform this relation. And so we have F alpha beta, which, as many of you who looked into instantons and things like that, should know as regarded as some kind of self-dual field strength. So if you have a gauge field, and if you have a field strength for some gauge field, then this can be combination of these kind of things. And so you can decompose this, since this is unsymmetric with respect to exchange of alpha with its dotted partner, with beta with its dotted partner. So we can decompose it into this way. So we are looking at this portion. And so you can show that this is a self-dual piece, and this is the anti-self-dual piece. So it's some kind of self-dual piece of field strength of some additional gauge theory. And in the
This is sort of a background?
So this is a background now, so I have to explain what I mean by that. So this background is easy to understand. You have gauge theory with n equal 1 supersymmetry. You just couple that to n equal 1 supergravity. This background is a little bit more exotic and do accordingly more interesting things. And so, for example, many gauge theories can be realized in the context of type 2 superstring theory, compactified on Calabi-Yau space with various configuration of brains. And if you have a type 2 superstring compactified on R4 times Calabi-Yau threefold, then by the standard counting of supersymmetry, you have n equal 2 supersymmetry. Okay? And n equal 2 supergravity contains gauge field taking value in U1. So n equal 1 gauge theory, supergravity only contains gravitons and gravitino, but n equal 2 has larger multiplet and contains photons of some kind. And if you introduce D brains, you break this to n equal 1, and sort of you make this part to be non-dynamical, but you can still make this non-trivial background of this gauge field configuration, and that's what I'm talking about here. So this is a remnant of the fact that you started with n equal 2 background. But anyway, so this is, I opened the parenthesis here and closed here, because what I'm going to say can be stated without referring to this kind of construction. But I just wanted to point out that this appears naturally if you embed this in the context of superstring. But I should point out that there are many gauge theories which do not have direct realization, non-direct realization from superstring compactification, and but what I'm going to say applies to those cases as well.
Wait, so F is just in the U1?
Well, this gauge field has nothing to do with the gauge theory we are talking about.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So in N equal 2, it's U1.
Okay.
Now, so the point of doing this, so the point of making actually, I might have made an error by writing while the blackboard was still wet. I guess this is one of the series of experiments that we are performing during this conference. So that means that maybe I should, if you don't mind, maybe I can draw it over here where it's getting dried out. So this is what we call the C deformation. So this is what standard tensor calculus would imply, but we would like to consider a superfield which satisfies these kind of modified, and so we call this as C deformation. Yes.
And the self-tuning, they are in the center. They commute with everything.
Right. Yeah, so that's a good point. So this is to be identity, to be regarded as identity in gauge theory, gauge group. And so this actually contradicts with what I said earlier. Namely, that if I write W alpha, so this is not. So I'm opening, I'm opening a parenthesis here. So if I write it in this way, then this would be equal to F A B C W alpha A W beta B T C if W is a Grassmannian. Oh, thank you. So if W is a Grassmannian, then this would be the case. That means that you cannot have the center part in this commutator. So actually having this term is in contradiction with the assumption that W is a Grassmannian. And in fact, W would be more like Clifford algebra as opposed to the Grassmannian algebra. And that's what one of the things that C deformation does in this case.
Thetas.
Well, so we are talking about a deformation of chiral rings, so x and theta are all at the same point when we're computing the product. I apologize for the mess I made, but this is, I believe, is temporary.
It's not.
I hope it's not permanent. So the statement is that if we postulate this relation, if we postulate this relation, then non-planar diagram contribute to the superpotential. Of so-called green superfield, the Grubor superfield. So this is called Grubor superfield. And moreover, not only that you get this generic structure from non-planar diagram, but these are non-planar diagram associated to the for the associated matrix models. Namely, that some of our planar diagrams are closely related to all genus partition function. Of the associated matrix model. So the statement is that if you assume that, then effective superpotential of that is given by sum over planar diagram matrix model, and if you do that, then this is extended to the full matrix model. And so this sort of resolved the question we had about what these matrix models are computing. That these are, one can interpret this as computing effective superpotential for gauge theory, but it's whose Greeno field obeys this deformed algebra.
Yeah. My question maybe wasn't phrased so well. What I meant was, is the symbols, these W alpha beta gamma and F alpha beta, can we just think of those as some constants?
Yes. In the framework of this computation, you can regard this as an extra external source. Namely, that what you do is that you have this gauge field coupled to various matter fields, and you want to compute the effective potential for this gauge sector. And so what you do is that Tan introduce this field as a background, and so there is a well-defined formalism in quantum field theory of what you have to do to compute effective action for these fellows. What you do is you integrate over all other degrees of freedom. And so from that point of view, you are just introducing these Ws as well as this and this as your background and just doing the standard quantum field theory for the rest of the system. So the statement is that if you couple, so if you are interested in purely Feynman diagram structure, et cetera, the statement one can make is that if you couple this matter sector to this kind of source, then only planar diagram contribute to particular type of Feynman diagram computation which compute for you the effective potential for W. But if you make this assumption, then you have to sum over all planar diagrams. So that's a statement. Okay. So that is a statement. Now, so I have to do some kind of budgeting of time, but let me see what I can do. Okay. So I should not use this one. Okay. Yes. No, yeah. So eventually that would come if you want to actually understand the quantization of W's themselves. But we are computing effective potential in a Wilsonian point of view. So we are assuming that actually the mass of all other fields are heavier than the confining scale of these fellows. So from Wilsonian point of view, you don't integrate them out. You integrate out other degrees of freedom. But there's a separate question of whether these guys can be quantized. And if so, what do we mean by quantizing Clifford algebra as opposed to the Grassmannian algebra? So how do you define integral over Clifford algebra as opposed to Grassmannian algebra, et cetera, which are questions I think that naturally comes from this kind of deformation, but I don't have a good answer. For this interpretation, no. But it's a question that has some meaning. Okay, so now let me first motivate why this is a natural thing to do and explain why some of a non-planar diagram comes from that interpretation. And if I have time, I will give you a general proof of why, how some of a non-planar diagram appears and reduced to the sum of a non-planar diagram of the associated matrix model. But I'm not sure whether I can go that far. But let me first start with the motivation. So again, many gauge theory, if not all, comes from superstring compactifications. On R4 times Carabiel threefold with brains or without, with fluxes or without. And let's explain. So for example, if you have type 2B superstring on R4 times Carabiel threefold, then this gives us n equal 2 supersymmetry on R4. And there are things called F terms. N equal 2 supersymmetry in 4 dimension contains a pair of spinners to parameterize. But there are effective potential which involves only integral over only one pair of that. And those are called F terms. And it can be expressed in this way. It is expressed in this way. So let me explain the notation. Okay. So we have n equal 2 supersymmetry. So that means that we are doubling the fermionic dimension of superspace. So the superspace coordinate x and theta, and theta above, which is an extra superspace coordinate. So what this superspace coordinate does is that combine the original the n equal 1 multiplet that we have been talking about over here into a single multiplet. And in particular, this combines this F alpha beta that I was talking about here with the Gluino superfield, a graviphoton superfield. You see? Yeah, sorry. Say that would be zero. So the difference. So this is a function of the sum of the two Grassmannian coordinate, and so this combines these two fields into single n equal 2 multiplet. And what? So I'm going to break this to n equal 1. Which separates these, and only this part survives as an n equal 1 supergravity multiplet afterwards. And S is a superfield whose lowest component is the complex moduli, is one of the complex moduli. Of Carabiel threefold in special coordinate. So S is basically the function of the complex structure of the compactified Carabiel space, and it is multiplied by bilinear of this supergravity field. Okay? So, and this F of G is a very interesting object. It turns out that this can be computed as topological string partition function. And this is discussed in my paper with Belshatsky, Chekhoti, and Buffer. Now, so now we'd like to break this into n equal 1. So, first of all, I want to point out that since S is related to complex moduli, so each S is in one-to-one correspondence with a three-cycle in compact three-cycle in Carabiel. If Carabiel itself is non-compact, we'll be talking about compact three-cycle. So now to break n equal 2 to n equal 1, we turn on n units of Ramon-Ramon three-form on the three cycle, the one of these three cycles that we are talking about. This n has nothing to do with this this n, and I apologize for the notation. So Ramon-Ramon three form is one of the field in the multiplet of type 2 super gravity in 10 dimension. And so we turn on the flux, and that breaks the supersymmetry. And so what you do is that what happens is that, for example, S is modified in this way. And this breaks S n equal 1 to n equal 2. So this n is the amount of flux. And you can this makes sense because for each S is associated to 3 cycle. And if you turn on flux for that 3 cycle, S is modified in this way. And so now if you want to compute a super potential, n equal 1 super potential, after this breakdown, after this explicit breaking of supersymmetry to n equal 1, you can easily do that by just substituting this into here, substitute this into here, and do the half of the superspace coordinate integral. Namely, so this has twice as many Grassmannian coordinates as n equal 1 superspace has. And basically, you just integrate out the difference. And so then you can easily see that this superpotential, so you can extract what kind of superspace integral you end up getting. One type of superspace integral is like that, where what you do is that you do the difference, the integral of a difference, and as you know, Grassmannian integral just means that you just extract the top part of that. And I pay attention to the top part of theta minus theta bar coming from here. So it just gives you one of them to be W, and the other is this one. So that's one. And the other one is gamma 2, which is the other one is this, where what I did was now pay attention to the fact that S also depends on the difference of this extra Grassmannian coordinate and extract that piece, which involves derivative here. Okay? And you have some about this because in general you can have several three cycle and several complex moduli. So for each of them you do this procedure and you get this expression. So this is the answer for effective superpotential. So n equal 1 superpotential I'm not writing the entire superpotential, but the two part which is relevant for the discussion here, which contains these computations. Now, this is about n equal 1 that arises from n equal 2 compactification with fluxes. But as I said, you can also do that with brains. And it turned out that there is a large n dualities. Which relate compactification with fluxes to compactification with brains. And so, as I understand, Jim asked me to talk about that sometime later. If you have compactification with flux of this type, typically these are related to compactification with brains and therefore has more direct microscopic construction of gauge theory out of superstring theory. And one can show that their superpotential has the same kind of structure. With f of g, computed as topological string amplitude. Yeah, so, well, there are other ways to get the top form. For example, you have higher order terms here. And that gives rise, for example, to the kinetic, the moduli dependence to the kinetic term for the gauge field, etc. And so, so you, for example, gauge kinetic term, W alpha, multiplied by something. So those things appear, and but you can read them off from this. This thing. Yes?
Is F alpha beta a U1 gauge field or a UN gauge field?
This is a super partner, n equal to super partner of graviton.
Yeah,
and so you only have U1 in that
case. Original formula, that commutative formula.
Right.
It was U1.
So that's different. So that's what I wanted to stress. So we are talking about gauge theory in four dimensions, which can have any gauge group, can be UN, but then there is another gauge field which has nothing to do with gauge symmetry, but appears as a super partner of graviton, and that's F.
All higher G part vanishes when you said F alpha beta.
Yeah. So that was what I was coming to. So from this structure, you see that if F alpha beta is equal to zero, and F alpha beta gamma is equal to zero, then gamma 1 vanishes because it's multiplied by these fellows, and gamma 2 is equal to d4x d square theta ni del F g equal 0, del Si. And so this is a structure, actually, which has been used in the literature discussing the relation between gauge theory and the matrix model.
So this should be a sum from J equals 0 up to standard.
Ah, I beg your pardon. I'm sorry. I apologize. So this should have been 0. Right. I could have also put G equals 0 here, but then it vanishes, so that's why I didn't. But that has somehow inherited upon gamma 2. And that was my mistake. So anyway, so G equal. So this is the formula that has been used very much in the since the, various literature from the summer, where F G equal 0 is interpreted as compute matrix model planar diagram partition function, and is giving the effective potential. But you see that if you turn on W or W alpha beta gamma or F alpha beta, then you start getting an all genus answer. If F alpha beta is still 0, but W alpha beta is non-zero, then genus 1 amplitude contribute to this. And this gives rise to the curvature square correction and to the superpotential. But then you can also turn on all other F, then you start getting sum over genuses.
This effect, yes. Gamma over here, remind me, that formula is an ansatz or actually derived?
This one?
Yeah.
Oh, this is derived. Yeah, so this was what was derived 10 years ago.
Okay. Wait, how the whole thing was the whole relation?
Right. So the whole relation between this expression together with the fact that you can use a matrix model to compute it. And it is important that this is computable in matrix model because that is what guarantees that in the case of open string, you can compute this using matrix model. Because the reduction to matrix model makes the essential use of the fact that the string field theory for open topological string is a Chan-Simon gauge theory or its dimensional reduction. And in many cases, in certain cases, that Chan-Simon theory, reduced Chan-Simon theory, turned out to be just a finite dimensional matrix model. And that was the chain of logic that led to this construction. So it's important that this is indeed given by topological string partition function.
So the n equals 1 formulas are, at least some of them can be gotten from the n equals 2 formulas, but there are also situations where you can't.
Right. So in that case, this is a string theoretical derivation. Right. This is a string theoretical derivation of this. But now it appears that there are larger class of gauge theory for which this formula is applicable, and for which there is no direct string theoretical derivation. So it's just a string theory in that case is a motivation for deriving this formula. But in fact, what you can say in those cases is the following, that this relation, so you can, so in a very strict mathematical sense, therefore, this is, for those large class of gauge theory, this gives you a motivation for this kind of formula, and it's higher genus generalization, and so you have to have the field theory derivation of that, but there are large class of gauge theory that comes from string theory, and for this, these are just direct derivation of that statement. And, but cancel, reduction to matrix model, etc., purely involves the four-dimensional part of the construction, which does not depend on whether the theory comes from the full 10-dimensional string theory or not. So I think that an essential feature of the derivation actually goes through even for this non-stringy type gauge theory. So let's see. So I only have 5 minutes left. So let me just tell you what I was planning to cover and finish it. So one thing I wanted to do was basically to explain this fact and this fact in a simple term and explain why only genus zero contribute to this partition function. And that basically comes from the computation of fermion zero mode. So let me just mention that. So if you have a string with D brains, then you'll be computing the amplitude of Riemann on Riemann surface with various handles. So you have boundaries and then handles. Okay, and so you have to do fermionic coordinate integral on this worksheet, and then there is a conjugate momenta to this. On the string world sheet, this is a zero form, and this is one zero form. And so, actually, there is a number of zero mode for this fellow, which you can easily compute as 2g plus h minus 1. On the other hand, the Greener superfield coupled to W alpha P alpha on the string wall sheet. Gauge field coupled to the boundary of string wall sheet. So you have gamma I. So this is gamma 1, gamma 2, gamma H. So there are I equal 1 to H boundaries on which this green field couples. And in appropriate formalism, this can be written in this way. And then this is a source, so you want to exponentiate it and sum over boundaries. If W takes value in typical generic non-abelian configuration, you also take care of path order exponential. However, if W alpha anti-commute with each other, then we can diagonalize W alpha. So that if that is the case, then you can forget about path ordering and regard this as just ordinary Grassmannian variable. So then you can ask how many operator of this kind we can insert in order to saturate these fermions. So we are doing Grassmannian integral for this world sheet coordinate. And so that means that you have to saturate fermion zero mode. In the other sense, you should be able to make a top form of this space of zero mode out of these kind of sources. Okay. Now, how many sources do we have? Well, we only have H boundaries. And moreover, they are not all independent because these are one forms. And if you sum them up, then it vanishes, because sum over the boundary is homologically trivial. So in fact, there are only only H minus 1 zero mode coupled to W alpha. Okay? So you want to saturate this many zero mode, and you only have H minus 1 zero mode to help for you. And so that's the issue. And so this is possible only if G equals 0. And that's the answer. And so therefore, if you assume, so that was what I said, that this was essential, one of the essential assumptions in deriving this formula. Because if you assume this, you can drop this fast ordering. And so therefore, you can conclude that because of fermion zero mode, only genus zero contribute to this amplitude. And then the rest is sort of detailed working out the integrand and show that the result is indeed a matrix model integral. Now, so there is an important assumption here. So if you don't do that, then you have to do that, and then this is incorrect. And so therefore, higher genus contribute, and that's what I wanted to say. So that's all, and I'm finishing 10. So thank you for your attention.
More questions?
Sorry, I didn't. What was the kinetic operator on the that counts to zero modes for the fermions?
Excuse me? Could you say it again?
What was the differential operator that the zero modes you're counting in this case?
What is the differential? Okay, so let me be more precise about what I mean by that. So this is a string theory explanation, but we should be doing field theory, right? So what you can do is write down the Feynman diagrams in field theory, but you do the Feynman diagram in the superspace. Okay, so that means that for each vertex you have x and theta, and for each vertex you have x prime, theta prime, etc. But that's awkward. So typically, when we do Feynman diagram computation, you go to the momentum space. So instead of assigning position over here, we assign momentum. So this is a bosonic momentum assigned to each vertex, which I denote by I. This is not I denote by I. So let's see. So you have P1 for bosonic coordinate, and then let me call pi1 for the fermionic coordinate, etc. So you have those. But you have also momentum constraint, namely that some of the momentum should be conserved at each vertex. And you have a solution to that. That is that you assign loop momentum to each of them. And then, so you have a loop momentum pi A, where A goes from 1 to L, the number of loops of the Feynman diagram. And you can write all the momentum at each edge as a linear combination of these loop momentum. And the Gluinos couple to this loop momentum at each boundary. And so you take product of that on all the propagators, and that is the weight that you have to assign, right? And so then you have to integrate. You need to do is to integrate over the loop momentum. And the question is that are there enough pi alpha that you can extract from this kind of source? And then you get to the same kind of counting, because it turns out that this L...
Do I need to wear this microphone? Or?
Yeah.
Okay, I do. So it's very nice to be here in Banff. So when Jim...